I'd like to call to order today's meeting, House Judiciary Policy and Finance Committee, March 4, 2004. Clerk, take the roll.
Chairman Smith.
Here.
Representative Eastland. Anderson. Blaine. Ellison.
Here.
Bowler.
Here.
Hillstrom.
Here.
Guilty. Johnson. Bless.
Here.
Lippman.
Here.
Meslow.
Yes.
Murphy.
Here.
Kamar.
Here.
Paul. Rhodes. Soderstrom. Strand. Stowell. Walls.
Representative Murphy, you have always taken care of your membership, whether you've sat over here or on that end. I think we still don't have a quorum, so we're going to hold the minutes. However, we are going to start. We have a number of presenters. It's a number of amendments. We aren't going to waste any time. We're going to spend our time wisely. Representative Fuller.
Right. Mr. Chairman, good morning.
Good morning. You got a motion, first of all.
We do. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that House File 1989 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Civil Law.
Very good. We have a motion before us. You've got a number of presenters. Why don't you go ahead?
I do, Mr. Chair, and I'm going to start out just briefly for the committee's purposes. This bill, and I believe you've agreed, Mr. Chair, has got a long path and a number of committees that it needs to go through. And the idea with today's committee hearing is to give the committee a brief overview, but to look at and address a number of amendments that have been proposed from the different interest groups. And then in the end, once it's passed, the other committees, I believe, civil law, commerce, health and human services, potentially some others, its last stop will again be this committee for final review and dealing with a large fiscal note that accompanies it. So at that point, and with that in mind, members, that we will be seeing this bill again. And today, there's a number of amendments before us dealing with this bill. But in general, this committee is very knowledgeable and has had many different times the methamphetamine issue has been brought before you. So I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about necessarily the problem of meth that we're starting to see in the state of Minnesota. But to give you a brief overview of how this bill got before us, the people that have worked hard on it, and then to go right into the amendments and the discussion of the changes that have been brought forward by the different interest groups, to really start getting this bill in a shape where we can continue to improve it, address some of the concerns, then get it back to this committee to deal with the fiscal note. And Mr. Chair, have Representative Gunther with us. I would also like to say a few words. He's been heavily involved in the task force that put this bill together.
Representative Gunther, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This methamphetamine task force started down in my area. Meth is a very, very huge problem down in all the border areas of the state, whether the north side of the state or the south side of the state, and it is working its way towards the core urban cities and suburbs. And where many people in suburbs say it's in crisis already, it truly is in crisis in greater Minnesota. And what we're trying to do with this bill, and it was a long lot of meetings in our area by our local sheriffs and judges. We had Attorney General, Department of Health. We had the Department of Agriculture. We had everybody involved in trying to come up with the very best meth bill in the nation. And I think the bill that Representative Fuller has is a culmination of that. And what we're trying to get done is to end up with a bill that will truly address sentencing concerns, the child endangerment concerns, and all the things that we have associated with methamphetamine use and manufacture. So I wanted to give you that little background. This was one deal that I see many people here in the audience that were at those meetings, and I appreciate their good work, and I appreciate Representative Fuller taking this bill.
Mr. Chairman, with that, knowing the issues regarding this bill, we'd like to get right into the testifiers to give just a little bit more overview on the committee process that was used and then get right into the amendments.
Let's do that. And So if we're going in order, then Mr. Paul Stevens, Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. I also note, Representative Ford, that you have 70% of the membership of this committee as authors or co-authors on your bill.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and we appreciate it very much. So yes. This committee's always been very very good dealing with the methamphetamine issue.
Sir, state your name and go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Paul Stevens. I'm a special agent with the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. Today, we bring before you a bill that I believe and I know can make a large difference, a huge difference in thousands of people's lives of people in the state of Minnesota. I've been involved with narcotics investigations for 28 years, and there is no drug out there that we've ever compared this to because of the addiction, the problems with the manufacturing of the methamphetamine, the environmental issues, the child abuse, the addiction rate, the difficulty that people get addicted to this, how difficult it is for them to break the habit. We have seen serious crime in the state of Minnesota escalate in the last 2 years as a result of methamphetamine. An agent of ours in southwestern Minnesota, 6 of his last 8 homicide investigations involved the use of methamphetamine. Every day we hear more unbelievable stories that are happening as a result of methamphetamine. What this bill does is addresses a lot of the problems that result from methamphetamine addiction. We hope to reduce the amount of people manufacturing methamphetamine and people using methamphetamine, therefore slowing or stopping the growth of and the spread of methamphetamine abuse in the state of Minnesota. Our group has been in contact with other states around the nation who have had this problem for 30 years, and some are a little shorter. But if we look to Iowa, their problem, even though their population is probably about a third of ours, their problem is 3 times what ours is as far as pollution, damage resulting from methamphetamine labs, and the expenditures that are necessary to follow up on the dangers that have resulted from the methamphetamine labs that are operating down there. We hope to slow the increase and turn it back, as in the state of Washington. We're trying to look at some of their policies and procedures, and this bill addresses a lot of little different things that need to be addressed. Maybe in 2-3 years we may have to readjust again, because methamphetamine and drug criminals will adjust with us. But if we can reduce right now and stem the growth, we will save the state and the people, people's lives. We'll save millions of dollars in future costs that we have not realized yet, and we undoubtedly will realize as a result of the child abuse and the removal of children, the cleanups, and the law enforcement, the corrections, and everything that's involved with it, not even including the loss of life to people that would have never been involved with drug addiction before.
Thank you, sir. Any questions from the committee? If not, thank you.
Thank you.
Next would be Brad Gerhart, Sheriff, Martin County. Welcome. State your name and then go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Brad Gerhart. I'm the Sheriff of Martin County. And my purpose here today is to inform you of just what I'm seeing on the local level, the county level, not only in the Martin County area, but from other sheriffs. Since the mid to late 1990s, the Martin County Jail has seen their average daily population go from under 24 per day to 32 per day, which was the rate in 2003. Problem with that is my jail capacity is 32. As you know, the Department of Corrections probably would like us to operate at 70% capacity so we can classify our prisoners appropriately. And I house several prisoners out of county, even out of state sometimes. The impact of that increase was an increase of my staff from 8 corrections officers to 12 corrections officers, which in salaries and benefits alone cost to Martin County is over $250,000. The main reason for that increase in looking at our statistics and why people are booked in is probably any given day 50 to 70% of my inmates in the Martin County Jail are there for meth or meth-related crimes. In 2003, 3,244 days were spent in the Martin County Jail for direct meth crimes, controlled substance crimes. 20% of the people arrested in 2003 repeated that same offense or similar offense in 2003. I even had one inmate that was booked in four times for same or similar offense in 2003. I have officers spending countless hours investigating meth crimes. One recent case involved six officers, 3 days of planning for a potential buy bust that was going to occur in or around the Fairmont area. On the day of the arrest, and probably the factors that contribute to this more is the paranoia that goes along with people that are addicted to methamphetamine and the violent crimes that these people are capable of committing. We need to prepare ourselves for explosive devices, handguns, firearms, things of that nature. On the day of the arrest, we had to call in 26 officers to control the buy. And over the course of 5 hours preparing the intelligence, officers responded from six different agencies. And I only have 10 officers, sworn officers, on my staff. So you can see where collaboration and awareness is really the whole key for us to survive and to move on. In the first 6 weeks of 2004, Fairmont Police, the Martin County Sheriff's Office, and the Minnesota River Valley Drug Task Force, and I'm sure you've heard the name Ginger Peterson. She's actually a deputy of mine. She's the person that did the majority of the research on this bill. We seized more meth in the Fairmont-Martin County area in the first 6 weeks of 2004 than the whole drug task force seized in all of 2003, and that covers four counties, Martin County, Watwan County, Blue Earth County, and Nicollet County. So we're not getting ahead of this thing. Somebody asked me, why is this happening? Maybe we're getting better at what we do. Maybe we're getting better at gathering intelligence. But the point is that we're hunting in a baited field. I mean, there's enough of it out there. And the more our awareness increases, the more labs and the more drug arrests we're going to be making. We're dealing with more violent crime than ever before. The impact on my office is deep. It's expensive. I can tell you about an attempted homicide in a small town outside the city of Fairmont. Where it was a drug debt that needed to be paid, and we now have three people serving 10 years or more in the state prison system here in Minnesota. It was an execution-style murder, if you will. Fortunately, the bullet traveled along the person's spine and came out his mouth, and he was released from the hospital 2 days later. Very fortunate to even survive that issue. But now we've got three people, ages 19, 20, and 21, spending 10 years or more in the state prison system. We had an 18-hour crisis standoff with a guy. We were going to do a search warrant on a house with a guy that was on meth and also suffered from post-traumatic stress syndrome from the Vietnam War. And that was an 18-hour negotiation involving two tactical teams and the Minnesota River Valley Drug Task Force. And these are just resources that I can't just call on at the drop of a hat. The saddest part of all, in my mind, is in the year 2000, we had one lab. In the year 2001, we had two labs. In the year 2002, we had 10 labs and dump sites. And we consider dump sites just an old lab. It's really what it is. They're dumping their chemicals. In 2003, we had 11 labs and dump sites. And I don't see an end to that. I mean, I just see it getting higher and higher. I did have one inmate in jail who was in for a couple of months. He gained so much weight. He gained over 50 pounds in 2 months. That he had to take the laces out of his shoes. It was questionable whether he could wear the clothes that he came to jail in. And he took the laces out of his shoes just so he gained so much weight in his feet that his shoes barely fit. And I have one other point here to make. And that is a letter that I received from an inmate. And in fact, he is still an inmate in my jail. And I question his sincerity on this letter. He addressed it to myself and the chief of police, Greg Brawlsman, from the city of Fairmont, basically telling us that we're doing the right thing and to stay the course. He's worried about his younger brothers, he's worried about his family, and he's certainly worried about his habit. I did not use this letter on Meth Awareness Day at the Capitol. It was on the 4th of February. But after a Meth Awareness Day that we had at the Opera House in Fairmont on the 19th, where our judge allowed inmates to go on furlough to get credit to come to the Awareness Day, allowed sentenced to service inmates credit to come to the Meth Awareness Day, this inmate was released from my jail, supervised, and came to this Meth Awareness Day. And he came up to me afterwards and tears in his eyes and says, "Are you using my letter?" And I questioned using his letter and his name for fear that his circle of friends, the users that he associates with, would retaliate in some way, shape, or form once he was released from jail. But I'm using Josh Bramer's name today. Josh signed a release, and I just want to read you a couple sentences out of this letter. He writes, "As you probably already know, I have prior drug charges and am facing another drug charge. This may sound stupid, but sometimes I feel more safe in jail because I know that when I'm out on the streets, temptation of using gets the best of me. This bill addresses a lot of areas, and one of them obviously is the fiscal note attached to the sentencing issues that this bill raises. But here's a testimony from an inmate that says he feels safer in jail. It gives him a chance to get ahead of the issue and to get his mind clear, and it takes months to get their mind clear before they're even conducive to treatment. With that, my final note is that a lot of our defendants come from Iowa. As you know, Martin County is right on the Minnesota-Iowa border, and we literally have people coming up from the Iowa area where they have had over 1,000 labs last year. Minnesota had 425, and they come to Minnesota to do their shopping for their precursors. And we need to control that. They run up and down the I-90 corridor looking for a Kmart, looking for a Shopko, looking for a Walmart to get their precursors for this. And this lab also addresses that issue. I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sheriff, what's the average age of the people that you have been arrested for this?
Early on.
Sheriff Gerhardt.
Thank you. Early on, I would say it'd be a typical male, Caucasian, late teens, early 20s. But in the last two, 3 years, we're seeing more and more females, and we were just trying to crunch those numbers ourselves. We're guessing between 35 and 40% are female, and we're getting a lot of 30 to 40-year-olds involved in these crimes as well. We have one guy that's a real loose cannon, quite honestly, that's out there now that is 58 years old that's working the meth angle and working it quite heavily.
And, Mr. Chair,
Murphy.
What's the occurrence of little children being found with when you find a lab?
Sheriff Gerhardt.
Little children being there.
What we're seeing is on the national average, I believe, is 20% of the homes have children, but on the Minnesota level, close to 40% of the homes, and in our case, honestly, we're seeing about 50% of them have small children present in the home when we make our arrests.
Thank you, Sheriff. Next testifier is Becky Keno, Minnesota Department of Health. Have a seat, give us your name, and then go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Becky Keno. I'm the manager of the Environmental Surveillance and Assessment Section at the Minnesota Department of Health, which houses the meth program for the Department of Health. The Minnesota Department of Health Meth Lab Program provides written and web-based information, consultation, toxicological advice, training, and cleanup guidance for Minnesota communities and residents with meth and meth lab concerns. And I'm sure some of you may have heard the presentation by Deborah Durkin at Meth Awareness Day. Deborah is the person who has gone throughout the state describing the program, working with law enforcement and local public health. She's talked with over 8,000 people this year alone, and her counterpart, Paul Stevens at the BCA, the two of them have done a great job of making an awareness across the state of this issue. As was mentioned earlier, in 1999, there were 20 reports of meth labs to the Minnesota Department of Health. In 2004, we've just gotten updated information at a request we sent out. There have been over 500 sites that have been reported to us, and we know this number is underreported, and we are sure there are many more. The issues of public health and child endangerment are among the primary concerns of the program. There are many dangerous solvents, metals, and caustics that are used to make meth. And exposures to meth making environment threatens the health and safety of children in many ways. And as Sheriff Gerhardt just spoke, we have children living in between 30 to 50% of Minnesota drug labs. And according to the state fire marshal, 30 to 40% of labs are discovered when they catch fire or blow up. And that's a significant concern. Children, we're especially concerned about children because they have higher metabolic and respiratory rates and a developing central nervous system, which leaves them particularly vulnerable to the effects of toxic chemical exposures. One of the telltale odors of cooking meth is described as being similar to that of cat urine. And many cooks cover or seal windows to conceal their operation and prevent the odors from escaping, which increases the possibility of combustion and further concentrates the level of toxic fumes in the environment that are being inhaled. Chronic exposures to the chemicals typically used in meth manufacture may cause respiratory, neurological, immunological systems damage, along with damage to vital organs such as the brain, liver, kidney, and spleen, and may result in birth defects. So we're concerned about the children being exposed to these and other drugs in utero. We are concerned about children living with users who suffer from poor living conditions, nutrition, health care, and parenting. And I'm sure many of you have heard the story of the woman in Otter Tail County who wanted this drug so much that she was not concerned about her child who was living in a house that was like 20 degrees during the winter. I mean, the stories are just unbelievable that come out. We are concerned about children living where the drugs are made and who are therefore at risk from chemical exposures, fire, explosion, weapons, poisonings, and other accidents. There's scientific evidence that symptoms found in children and other vulnerable people exposed to meth are similar to those found in the users. We need to get these kids out of the labs and provide them with appropriate evaluation, treatment, and safe placement. The toxic chemicals used in manufacturing are often dumped in the outdoors, potentially contaminating groundwater, which is used for drinking water, and causing soil contamination in areas where children play. We need to clean the meth lab sites before they are lived in again. Exposure to toxic contaminants and meth continues if the interiors are not cleaned. Unknowing and unsuspecting purchasers of homes that were once used as a meth lab and are not remediated are susceptible to the same toxic exposures. And if you saw the presentation on Channel 9 where a woman bought a trailer home and was very excited about buying this trailer home, moved her three kids into the home, had painted, cleaned the place up. It was a mess when she bought it. And she painted the walls, put rainbow on the side for the kids' rooms. And her kids started getting sick shortly after she moved in. Well, she started investigating, and people said, well, didn't you know that was once used as a meth home? And apparently the people who lived in the mobile park did, but she was not made aware of that. And she had saved the carpet that was in the mobile home because it was still in good condition. She put it in the children's playroom, and that's where the kids spent the majority of their time. When they took a sample of the carpet, the levels were 11,000 times the permissible level for meth residue, and these kids were being exposed to this on a daily basis, and she had no knowledge of it whatsoever. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Too often these kids are returned to drug environments, both to parents who use or make drugs and to residences where drug labs have been seized but which have not been cleaned. And I guess I'd like to just leave you with a description of the physical and living conditions of children found in a meth lab home as described. The five children ranged in age from 1 to 7 years old. The one-bedroom home had no electricity or heat other than a gas stove with the oven door open. Used hypodermic needles and dog feces littered areas of the residence where the children were found playing. Because there were no beds for the children, they slept with blankets underneath a small card table in the front room. The bathroom had sewage backed up in the tub, leaving no place for the children to bathe. A subsequent hospital exam revealed that all the children were infected with hepatitis C. The youngest was very ill. His liver was enlarged to the size of an adult's. The children had needle marks on their feet, legs, hands, and arms from accidental contact with syringes. And as I'm sure as our friend in law enforcement will tell you, this is not a unique circumstance. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you, Ms. Keno. Next presenter will be Nancy Schuweiler from the Association of Minnesota Counties, also Dakota County Commissioner. Have a seat, give us your name, and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Nancy Schuweiler. I am the chair of the Dakota County Board of Commissioners, and I'm here today representing the Association of Minnesota Counties as their second vice president and the Metro Intercounty Association, known as MICA. Thank you for addressing the issues of methamphetamine production, use, and response. It's a complicated issue that counties have been dealing with for the past several years and remains a critical issue for communities. We appreciate the opportunity to comment on our concerns and needs today. AMC and MICA support the state's attention to this issue that increasingly maligns communities in this state. Methamphetamine use has increased dramatically over the past few years, and the number of meth labs busts, has soared. This has resulted in major increases to local costs for police, sheriff, jails, treatment, child protection, and public health. As you have heard, methamphetamines are easily manufactured using common household products and chemicals and is one of the strongest stimulants and the most addictive. The majority of meth users have extensive health needs once they are taken into custody. Meth use is associated with increased crimes, specifically child and domestic abuse, property crimes, and drug-related homicides. In Minnesota, 50% of the children removed from drug labs test positive for meth. Many of the chemicals in the production of meth use are safe when used as intended, but the byproducts of production are very dangerous and include lead, mercury, and phosphine gas. Improper disposal of these chemicals may contaminate surface water and well water if poured into the ground or sewer septic system, leaving many environmental hazards. Many counties and cities are utilizing their authority for public health nuisance control under Minnesota Statutes 145A to address environmental health issues and internal cleanup. Ordinances have allowed local governments the opportunity to comprehensively address these public health nuisances. Currently, there are 15 counties with ordinances and another 66 more counties are in the process or are currently evaluating the need for such an ordinance. We believe it is essential that the state assist local governments by sharing the enormous costs that result from managing this issue responsibly. AMC and MICA support funding to local governments to help pay our costs associated with meth labs. Specifically, we support the proposed revolving loan fund for local governments with ordinances. Unfortunately, some property owners are victims of meth users or producers or simply are unaware that meth production is occurring on their property. We absolutely believe it is in the best interest of our communities to provide funds to clean up the meth labs and protect our water and air quality. I have heard comments that meth labs are a rural issue, implying that the problem is exclusive to Greater Minnesota. Our experience in Dakota County does not substantiate that claim. From the last 6 months of December of 2003, 10 meth labs were seized within Dakota County. Two were in townships, and 8 were in municipalities. 4 in the city of Lakeville, 1 each in Farmington, Eagan, Burnsville, and Invergrove Heights. Of those 10, 4 labs were in vehicles. 3 were in townhomes, 2 in homes, and 1 in a manufactured home. Disposition of cleanup for these labs were as follows. 5 properties were cleaned up by their property owners. 2 vehicles and 1 manufactured home have been or will be crushed. Their market values are less than the cost for cleanup. Dakota County has paid for the destruction of the manufactured home. However, we do hope to get that expenditure repaid since our county attorney has attached an order of restitution to the 2 individuals who are incarcerated for this crime. 1 house and 1 vehicle are yet to have been cleaned up. Early indications are showing this problem is growing exponentially. For the 2 months of 2004, Dakota County has already seized 9 meth labs. If this is not an anomaly, but an example of what to expect in 2004, we could experience a 270% increase in the number of meth labs seized in 2004 over 2003. And those are the labs that we know about. When you consider the health risks to those exposed to these potentially lethal chemistry projects, we could anticipate that the number of people affected to reach epidemic proportions. As you can see, this is a critical issue confronting all communities in the state of Minnesota. It is complicated and has long-term implications that we are just beginning to comprehend. I truly appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today and want to thank you for your work on this important issue. I will entertain any questions the committee may have for me at this time.
Any questions at this time? Thank you. Please stay for the balance of our hearing. Representative Fuller, we're going to move to Abby Part of Minnesota Growers Association and then proceed with presentation of your amendments.
Wonderful, Mr. Chairman.
Very good.
Mr. Chairman, at this point, as we've heard, you know, being testified, is, you know, this issue is not only, you know, just in a few parts in the state. It is spreading across the state. More and more communities are beginning to see and realize how big of an issue this is. But now, as we move forward, there's a number of amendments that you have in your packet that have been brought forward and proposed as changes to this bill. And rather than going through the bill section by section, what I'd like to do, Mr. Chair, is just have the committee hear the amendments and go through them, vote them up or down, and really get this bill into a form where it can move on to the next committee and we can continue the dialogue of realizing some of the effects that this bill is going to have, and then deal with the fiscal note when it gets back here, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, then I'm looking at A1. Can we start there, Representative Fuller? All right, Representative Fuller has an author's amendment. It's H1989A1. Representative Fuller, may I have a motion on that?
I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Okay, that's before us. Go ahead and tell us about it.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Nancy Bukarm, the Director of Government Relations for the Consumer Healthcare Products Association. We represent the manufacturers of over-the-counter drug products. The amendment before you is to delete phenylpropanolamine. I promise I won't make anybody in the committee say that. There is no longer any phenylpropanolamine on the market. FDA issued a voluntary recall, I think it was about 2 years ago, so it's just an unnecessary term in there. As for the other language in the isomers and salts of isomers, et cetera, a federal law defines pseudoephedrine products and ephedrine products in terms of base. And to be consistent with federal law, we think that Minnesota should move for the amendments in that regard, and also to ensure that certain products made by Shearing Plow are legal in the state because they use, I won't get into too much chemistry, and I'm not a chemist, they use pseudoephedrine sulfate in your manufacture versus pseudoephedrine hydrochloride. And if you define in terms of isomers and salts of isomers, it would make certain of those products, which are very important to Minnesotans, particularly Claritin D, there would be one box that would not be legal if you define it in terms of isomers and salts of isomers.
All right. Any discussion from the committee members on the amendment? On the A1 amendment? Any discussion? Or moves the A1 amendment. Hearing no discussion, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Motion prevails. A1 is attached. On the A2, on the A2-2A amendment, Representative Fuller.
I would move the A2 amendment, Mr.
Tell us about it.
Or is it the A2A?
It's the A2-2A.
What you said, Mr. Chairman. I'd move that amendment.
Very good.
Go ahead.
Again, Mr. Chairman, Nancy Bukar from CHPA. We spoke with Representative Fuller. The majority of states that do have retail sales limits in existence right now, and there are seven states, have three packages. We think that's a consistent number. There are many reasons why a person would need to purchase three packages of a pseudoephedrine product, particularly in large families where you need a daytime product, a nighttime product, and your spouse or a teenager in the family likes something different than what you're taking. There are over 400 brand name products out there containing pseudoephedrine, and consumers like what they like, and we think that three packages is a reasonable number. As for the second part of the amendment, that is to give retailers who would be enforcing this law the flexibility to either code their systems by packages or by grams. I know of two major chain retailers in the state and nationwide who use, and I don't know how they do this, but their point of sale systems are set to measure by grams in the package. So that would make it easier for the retailers to enforce these provisions.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Representative Fuller.
What we're trying to deal with here, members, and currently in the bill it says two packages may be sold and does not say anything about the number of grams. What we're trying to identify out there is some mechanism that says, you know, because these people, they go into a Walmart, they go somewhere else, they're buying just stacks of Sudafed that then they break down to make the meth, is to try and put, you know, into this bill something that says, you know, at this many packages, the retailers, the clerks, the cashiers, at some point, you know, to be able to throw up the red flag as to, you know, this person might be, you know, cooking meth. But also with regards to the 9 grams, to put that into this bill also, by having a number of grams there, the companies can't just repackage and, you know, the packages get bigger rather than, you know, having the number of packages. I hope I'm making sense. I'm rambling. But having the number of grams in there also will try to control the size of the packages that will be put out on the market.
Representative Waltz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Fuller, Crow Wing County and all the meth cases we work, 30% of them are in Baxter, where I'm employed as a police officer. And on the 371 strip in Baxter, a meth manufacturer can go up and down that strip and buy everything they need to cook. And my stores have policies that they only sell two boxes. They won't sell more than that to any individual. Is this going to force them to have to sell three?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm sorry, I can't see your
That's
name
okay.
on the tag. We believe, and I think the retailers would agree with us, that it's a business decision for a store to limit sales, and we thoroughly endorse a business measure like that. I know that in some areas of certain states where they see high theft of particular items used to manufacture methamphetamine, and I don't even mean pseudoephedrine, I mean lithium batteries, things like that as well, they choose to put it behind the counter, and we endorse a retailer's choice to take voluntary measures. I know that there are certain stores that, certain chains that already have voluntary limits nationwide, Walmart, Walgreens, Albertsons, they all are voluntarily limiting sales of certain products.
Representative Waltz.
Mr. Chairman, so this will not force my Target, my Walmart, to sell three boxes instead of two. They still have that option where they can sell, they can stay at two per customer.
Ms. Bukar.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, that's correct. They can do whatever they want. Yeah.
Any further questions or discussion? We're on the A2-2A amendment. If not, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Motion prevails, and that is attached. A3 amendment, Representative Fuller.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A3 amendment.
All right, it's before us. Tell us about it.
Introduce yourself.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Liz Carpenter. I'm the Vice President of Public Affairs for the Minnesota Pharmacist Association. The placement provisions in the original bill would require that any product containing a precursor be placed behind the counter in a locked display case within 6 feet of a manned checkout counter with an unobstructed view, or that an anti-theft device be used. In considering this amendment, it's important to know how many products that we're talking about. There are more than 4,000 SKUs represented by the original language. And chain pharmacies typically carry about 400 different types and sizes of products containing pseudoephedrine. Most often, pharmacies are designed to have cough and cold products near the pharmacy counter. This allows the pharmacist to counsel the patients and assist them with product selection. In many stores, the pharmacy has different hours than what the actual store does. It will close in the evening, and then the store remains open later. The original language in the bill would require that either these products would be made unavailable or placed closer be placed closer to the regular checkout counters. And this would kind of defeat the purpose of the pharmacy design in having those products close to the pharmacist, where they can get counseling on how their over-the-counter drug products might interact with their prescription drug therapies. So the placement, this amendment would remove those placement provisions but leave the sales restrictions in place, and we do support the three package or 9 gram limits.
Any questions on the A3 amendment? Any discussion on it? Seeing none, those in favor of the A3 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Motion no. prevails. The A3 is adopted. Representative Fuller, correct me if I'm wrong, but in the packet we had A4-4. You choose not to proceed with that, but the A4-5, is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right, go ahead. Representative Fuller moves the A4-5 amendment. It's before us. Would you tell us about it?
Mr. Chairman, Nancy Bukar again from CHPA. The amendment before you is designed to do two things. The part that begins with B is referring to something that doesn't exist yet, but we hope it will be here very soon. Pfizer has been working for a number of years on something called lock technology. This would be the inclusion of a chemical within the tablet that would effectively prevent the use of the pseudoephedrine in there for the manufacture of methamphetamine. We hope it's close. We hear that it's very, very close. And once that chemical is available, FDA has indicated that they would have an expedited approval process, and Pfizer has also indicated that they will license this chemical use for a very nominal fee to all the manufacturers who choose to do it. I believe that all of my members will choose to do that. So that is the lines 4 through 6. And here's Tom Schmidt from Pfizer to further explain that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as the language has been explained to you by Nancy Bukar, this is a manufacturing process that Pfizer has worked on for over 10 years.
Yes, state.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Schmidt, government relations manager for Pfizer here in St. Paul.
Thank you.
We've been working on this process for over 10 years. We've spent about $12 million on it. And what it is the process where most of these over-the-counter products that have this ingredient in it could be made with a different approach to the ingredient, such that when it gets into one of these labs, it would not be able to be converted into street meth. We are very close to it. We've had to, as we develop the different chemicals, we have to first make sure it's going to work as indicated on the package, then give it to the DEA and see if they can break the code, and we've stumbled through that a couple of times. We finally have back from the DEA their assurance that our last attempt at it, they weren't able to convert it, so that once it got on the street, it won't be able to be converted. And we are committed to licensing it for a nominal fee to any other manufacturer, so that, again, most of the products out there today could use this process, and there would not be retail products in stores that would be able to be taken and converted into meth. Our next hurdle is that we have to figure out how to manufacture this on a mass manufacturing basis and then make sure it still works. We believe that we've never been this close before. We believe it will happen. And so by your approving this amendment, you'll not only incentivize Pfizer to keep investing the time and money to come up with a solution for those labs that use retail products, but you'll also incentivize other manufacturers to work with us. And again, we're very committed on a nominal basis. We need to license it so we still have some control over the product and make it available to any other manufacturer. So by putting this into the bill, you'll encourage us to do it and encourage others to use that product, and we may have a major breakthrough in a solution to the product that is made through people getting product out of retail stores.
Very good. Committee, the A4-5 amendment, which we've been discussing, did not meet the time rule of our committee rules. However, if there is no objection, if there is an objection, we'll put it to a vote and we'll proceed anyway. So if there is no objection, we're going to proceed on the A4-5 amendment. Representative Fuller moves the A4-5 amendment.
I do, Mr. Chair, and I would appreciate the committee's indulgence with the timeline rule. There's, as you can see, a number of amendments to this bill, and trying to get them all drafted properly has been a challenge. So appreciate the committee.
If there is no objection timely, we'll go to discussion of the amendment. Representative Ellison, timely.
Mr. Chair, I would like to interpose an objection, and the basis of it is that, I've heard Mr. Schmidt use the term nominal fee. And I would be interested in knowing a little bit more about how nominal this fee is going to be.
We're not going to discuss the amendment unless and until we first vote on your objection to its timeliness. So I suspend debate on the amendment, and we will first take up the issue of timeliness. Representative Ellison objects, and therefore the rule that we have, we will proceed to put it. So with your, so what we will do at this time then is put it to the committee members on Representative Ellison's suggestion and objection to timeliness. So the question then before the committee is, shall we proceed to hear, discuss, and then debate, and then vote on the A4-5 amendment? Those in favor proceeding to do so signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
All right. We're on the A4-5 amendment. Representative Ellison.
Mr. Chair, the reason why I did interpose my objections is because this bill seems to have some potentially far-reaching implications, which I don't think, as a committee, we have enough information to make any clear decision about. Whenever I hear a manufacturer of in the position to gain financially from a decision that this committee could make, I'd like to know some little bit about the financial implications of this. And so my timeliness objection had more to do with giving Representative Fuller an opportunity to give us a little bit more meat on the bones of the A45 amendment. And I'd just like to know, Mr. Schmidt, can you give us some information on how nominal this nominal fee is going to be?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ellison, I do not have information on the amount of the fee, but let me say this. This is the language that has been put into the Senate bill here. This is language that is passed in, I will get the number for you, but a number of other states. We have gone to a number of state capitals and testified that it will be a nominal fee. We are not seeking a competitive advantage by doing this. Pfizer's sales, annual sales, are $50 billion. We've spent 10 years and $12 million. This is financially, for us, is a very small project. And the fact that we are committed in front of a number of legislatures where they've passed this language, that it will be a nominal fee, I am quite certain that it'll be certainly a nominal fee that is well within the reach of the people who make these products. And also, the need to license it is to make sure it's done correctly, which I believe the DEA will require of us, so that it is done in such a way that nobody else finds some way to break the code or put in a substitute product or anything else. We want to stop this problem. And so I don't have dollar numbers, but I do have the fact that we've testified and presented and committed in a number of legislatures. So I'm quite sure that we'll have our feet to the fire, that if any company says I didn't get a nominal fee, that would be a PR disaster almost as bad as some of the ones I'm fighting these days in other venues.
Representative Ellison.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Smith, I mean, I have never found the argument persuasive that other people did it, so we should do it. If my son told me that, it wouldn't wash, and I don't think it should wash here. So I appreciate you offering us what other state legislators have done and what the Senate has done, but I just don't find that persuasive. I'd also like to note that I don't think Pfizer got to be a $50 billion company by charging nominal fees. It's a for-profit company, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's the country that we live in. I listen to you, sir, so if you would. And so that's the country that we live in. But you know, I just feel like, you know, given that this could well give Pfizer a competitive advantage, I would just like to know a little bit more about the numbers. And I would imagine that if you've been in front of all these state legislatures in the Senate, that you must have come up with a number by now, or maybe everybody's just taking Pfizer's word for it. And that does concern me. So I'll be voting against the amendment. I'm not sure what position I'll take on the overall bill. I do have some questions, Representative Fuller, but I think that this particular provision amendment does bear more study, and I think it will be prudent for us to go slow on this one.
Representative Lippman.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Schmidt, do I have it correct, which is if Pfizer uses its resources and technology and brain power and innovation power so as to develop methods that other generic drugs can comply with the Fuller bill, if it were enacted, that it should receive some royalty for its inventiveness? Is that the point of the A4-5 amendment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lippman, no, we are not looking to make back the money that we made. We need to have a licensing for control of the use of the invention, but we're committed that this needs to be a solution to an awful problem, and similar to our programs where we give away millions of dollars of drugs, either free or for a nominal fee. This is an area where we feel we need to step up and be part of the solution. And to Representative Ellison's point, the reason that other legislatures have passed this provision and the state Senate bill has it here is that it's to incentivize not only ourselves but others to try and find these kinds of solutions so you can have an incentive to get it there and see that it would come to fruition and solve that part of the problem.
Mr. Chair, if I could just very quickly, is also to Representative Ellison, if they are successful, the ingredient that would then go into Sudafed and these other drugs would literally make it so these drugs could not be broken down and used to cook methamphetamine. So going to your Walmart and buying three packages of Sudafed would be for naught because you could not turn that Sudafed into methamphetamine. That's what they are trying to do and to spread across the market. So all in all, they'd have to go find another precursor, another drug, or something else that would work to make the drug.
Representative Lippman.
Chairman Smith, Mr. Schmidt, just so that I understand, you're looking for an opportunity to give away your inventiveness and brain power for a charitable and public service and public-spirited purpose.
Mr. Schmidt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lippman, it's certainly is in that direction, but I think it's more than that. I think that we have a responsibility with Sudafed on the market, and we want to share that as a solution. Also, Nancy Bukar can give comment if the committee is interested on what she understands from other manufacturers.
Very briefly, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Lippman,
just so that I understand the science behind this, behind the amendment, kind of a two-part question. In a manner that prevents the drug, as it's stated on lines 5 and 6, I mean, is there a solid science, or, I mean, those seem like that could be a matter of debate among chemists, and I'm just wondering whether there's a uniform standard. And likewise, with exempting drugs that are marketed or aimed at application for children less than 12 years old, are those not possible to convert into methamphetamine? Is that the rationale behind both of those pieces of the A4?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lippman, actually the subdivision 6 that you just referred to is really a very separate amendment that Representative Fuller and Nancy Bukar will speak to.
Okay.
I'm only speaking to the lines 4 through 5 and 6, and the answer to your question on the science of it, it has to first work for the symptoms. And then it has to pass muster with the DEA. And the reason it's taken us 10 years is several times we've had different ingredient composition that we worked for the symptoms, but when we sent it to the FDA, they tried to break the code as the meth cookers would try, and they found a way with their expertise. And so neither DEA nor Pfizer was satisfied that even though they have super expertise, neither of us wanted to proceed. So we finally have one where they've said we can't break this code. This isn't going to work. And so it's the standard, the scientific standard is it had to satisfy DEA first. And now as our production engineers are working on, can we mass produce it in such a way that one, it's going to take care of the symptoms, and two, a DEA won't break the code. It's closest we've ever been, and it's been this sort of incentive passed in the past from other legislatures that have encouraged us to keep working on this for 10 years and $12 million that, with the hope that it can be a solution to an awful problem.
On the A4-5 amendment, Representative Hillstrom, do you have a question? On the A4-5 amendment before us. No, we're done with presentation. Unless there's a question, we don't need any more testimony on this amendment. Representative Lesch.
Just a brief question for is Mr. Schmidt?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Schmidt, my question is, you spent 10 years and I don't know how many million dollars working on this, well before we saw the severity of the current methamphetamine epidemic, at least in Minnesota. What caused you to start this 10 years ago?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ellison, the nature of research is such that it takes that much time, and when we began to see some even small problems with it, we felt we needed to get started on it. It's become an epidemic now, but even those small problems early on, and with our product with Sudafed, we felt particularly out there. And also felt a responsibility that if we could solve it, we needed to do that. But it takes that kind of time to get to find the breakthrough. It's what the nature of the research takes, that kind of time.
Anything else? Any other questions of the committee? If not, a 4-5 amendment is before us. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Fuller, I believe you have also the A5 amendment. Is that
correct? That's correct, Mr. Chairman. I'd move the A5.
Tell us about it, please.
Hi, my name is Abby Parda, and I am the Government Affairs Manager for the Minnesota Grocers Association. And along with the Minnesota Pharmacists Association and the Minnesota Retailers Association, we have concerns with this portion of the bill, and this puts age restrictions on the persons that can buy products containing pseudoephedrine. The proposed amendment would limit the age restrictions of these over-the-counter drugs that are products that are actually been labeled on the back for persons of ages younger than 18. 12 years of age and older normally are what they are labeled with. And they're used safely with children of this age. The age limit poses a significant problem for grocers, pharmacists, and retailers because simply the number of products that are in our stores, a large Walgreens may have 400 products. A typical larger grocery store may have 150 SKUs. That's not each brand name. That's all the different sizes. And smaller pharmacies or grocery stores may have 75 products or fewer. It depends upon the size and what they choose to carry. And just to illustrate some of the problems, I brought some products here today, and you can see by the untrained eye how this could be kind of difficult for a store clerk. Let's say a person comes up with a Benadryl and another Benadryl. I don't know if you know just by looking at them, but one of these needs to be carded and the other does not. So you can see where that can be extremely confusing. Also, maybe someone comes up with a Claritin D product, or this is a Walgreens store brand called Walfinate. One of those products has to be carded and one does not. And as you can tell, if a normal, ordinary person looks at them, they just look like coal products to all of us. So we think this provision could be extremely problematic, and we would like to be partners in solving the methamphetamine problem through training and education, but we think that the restricted age access for a product that is legal of people under age 18 is not the way to go. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, most people bring donuts before the committee or bagels, but if anybody does have a cold,
and some bring drugs. All right, Representative Walt.
Turn over your ID.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Fuller. In order to cook a decent amount of meth, it takes about 2,000 pills. And in Baxter, using Baxter as an example, maybe it's an anomaly, maybe it doesn't fit the rest of the state, but the cooks that I deal with are going after the 15, 16, 17-year-olds and getting them hooked into the meth. They like it. You want some more? Get me some pills. Take the money out of your mom's purse. Go buy them. Steal them. However you got to get them. My cooks are targeting these 15, 16, 17-year-olds, and these kids are getting hooked into this stuff, and they're going to die on it. I like your bill. I'm going to vote for it whether this amendment's on it or not, but I can't support this amendment. The cop in me can't let me do it. So I just wanted to express that and let committee members know these guys are going after these kids. They're telling them, take the money from your mom's purse. Go buy me some pills. I need 2,000 of them by Friday. And they're getting these kids hooked on this stuff, and they're going to die. I can't support your amendment. I do support your bill, and I like the work you've done on it, though.
Appreciate it. And Mr. Chair, if I may.
Representative Foley, you may. That was not a question, so you don't need to answer.
Right, but I would
however,
like to
it was a statement. You feel free to respond.
You bet. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Walls, I know exactly what you're saying, and I appreciate the work all of our officers are doing out there now. And in my area, my officers, as we've seen a huge increase in, you know, the meth labs around, is they are currently working with the retailers, with the big Walmarts and the Targets. And many of these, the larger national companies, have built into their registers flags that come up if people are buying certain ingredients, not just the cold medicine, but the other ingredients, the matches, whatever it is, that we need to continue to, you know, work with grocery stores, convenience stores, pharmacies, all of them, to do a job of educating so they notice, you know, are we seeing, you know, these 15, 16, 17-year-olds coming in, and work with them so they know what to look for. And I think we're better off going that direction rather than having the legislature, through criminal penalties and misdemeanor penalties, all of a sudden, you know, turning 18-year-old, 17-year-old cashiers into misdemeanor criminals because they forgot to card somebody because the package was pink and not blue. I think we can go through a process where we're educating all of those retailers and do it maybe with a softer hammer in our local communities and having the state having a big hammer.
Any further questions on the A5 amendment? Excuse me, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there anything currently in law that prohibits retailers from refusing to sell these kinds of over-the-counter drugs to people under the age of 18?
I don't believe, Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I don't believe so.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I absolutely am concerned as well. However, if in the town of Baxter there is nothing in the law that prohibits a retailer from choosing not to sell, that may be another way to approach this very serious problem.
Very good. Any other questions? Any other discussion?
I'd renew my motion.
On Representative Foer's motion that A5 be adopted, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
Chair's in doubt. Let's see, a show of hands. Those in favor, raise your hand. Put your hands down. Those opposed, raise your hand. There being 12 in favor and 5 against, that motion is adopted. A6-6, Representative Foer.
Mr. Chair, this is the A6 amendment is an amendment that would prohibit local units of government from going further than the state has in regards to this issue. Either one you want to speak to?
Do you have any testimony on that?
Mr. Chairman. And members of the committee, Nancy Bukar from CHPA. Every state that has passed retail sales limits, there are 7 of them, also have preemption of the local ordinances. And when this problem first started really gaining steam, particularly in California, they claim, and they really do make the most methamphetamine in the country, retailers came to the legislature and said, look, we're having a huge problem with local ordinances, particularly stores like Walmart, Walgreens, places like that. Chico did 2 packages. San Bernardino did 1 package. So it was an agreement between the retailers and law enforcement in California that said, fine, we'll live with package limits, but you have to preempt the local ordinances because there's just no way for large retailers to try and comply with differing ordinances in the state. So there are the 7 states that have retail sales limits have enacted local ordinances. It's much easier from an enforcement level too, for state police and others to have a statewide program as opposed to a piecemeal approach to the law.
Any questions? Further, who are we on? I apologize. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually had a question for Representative Walls on whether or not the decision to limit the number of products that's sold in his community, whether that is a store decision or if that was a local decision placed upon the stores. But he's not here right now, so I'll wait on my question.
Okay. We have Representative Ellison next.
Representative Foer, as I understand this amendment, the city of Baxter, which Representative Walls helps to protect, would be in bad shape if they wanted to pass a local ordinance that said that, well, maybe in the rest of the state you can sell to kids, but in Baxter you can't. Or maybe in the rest of the state you can sell three packages, but in Baxter you can only sell two. As I understand this amendment, that local prerogative would be eliminated. Am I correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ellison, in the sense that the city of Baxter could not go further than the state. Currently, in law, what is happening in Baxter, I believe, and we can confirm with Representative Walls if he comes back. There he is. It is his local retailers that are putting into place those restrictions and not the city of Baxter.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Ellison.
I do understand what you're saying, but I mean, I want to know if in answer to my question, if the city of Baxter or some other city or even city of Minneapolis, my city, said, look, we're not going to have a more lenient law than the state allows, but what if we want to have a more restrictive law? What if in the city of Baxter, or Minneapolis for that matter, we want to say that kids, for instance, for example, cannot buy these precursor products, and we're only going to sell two packs of Sudafed as opposed to three? As I understand it, this amendment would preempt the local authority from making a more restrictive law with regards to these precursor drugs for meth. Am I right about that?
Representative Fuller.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ellison, you are.
Further questions?
Yes.
Go back to Representative Hillstrom. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Walls, I'd like to ask you a question. Actually, you were out of the room when it was my turn the last time. This amendment does take away the local's ability at the city ordinance level from regulating product and how much is sold. Is the regulation that's done in your community, was that a choice by the retailers, or was that something that the community as a whole or the city or county decided?
Representative Walls.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hillstrom, that was worked out between the police department and the retailers. It wasn't done by ordinance. We approached the businesses and got them, helped get them more aware of the problem, and they chose to do it themselves. Well, we asked them to, and they did it as a business, not as a city ordinance. So that's how it is currently in Baxter.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you. Representative Walls, then how do you feel about a preemption of your local community saying that this state law would take precedence over anything your local community may want to do?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hillstrom, I don't like it.
I'm sorry?
I don't like it.
Thank you.
However, I do like Representative Fuller's bill.
Thank you, Representative Walls.
Any further questions, Representative Hillstrom? All right, we got Representatives Lipman and then Hilty. Representative Lipman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Fuller, two-part question. One is, have you talked to the League of Minnesota Cities about the A6-6, and is this going to local government sometime on your path?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lipman, local government very well could get added to the list of committees that this bill needs to go through.
But not currently?
Not currently, no.
And Mr. Chairman, have you talked with the League of Minnesota Cities about the A6 and preemption?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lipman, I have not.
Okay. Representative Hildy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could, I'd like to ask Representative Walls a question also.
He likes my bill, Mr. Chair. I'd just like that pointed out again for the record.
Representative
I like
Walls,
bill also,
we
Mr.
can,
Mr.
if you choose
Fuller.
To leave the room, we can have you paged when we vote. But since you're here,
Mr. Chairman, I should have probably followed what I usually do in this committee and just sit silent and listen, I guess.
Yes, you should have. Representative Hildy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Walls, the question is simply, isn't it, of the retailers in Baxter that have agreed to limit sales, are those major retailers such as Walmart and Target?
Representative Walls.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, it's kind of a combination of major retailers. It's Target, it's Walmart, and then there's a couple convenience stores that do this as well, but it's not every business on what we call the strip, as 371, the business district.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you. And then, Mr. Chair, Ms. Buchard, I believe that the first thing you said about the necessity for this amendment was that major retailers could not handle different requirements in different in different stores, but it seems they're already doing that. So how do you explain that?
Well,
Ms. Bukar.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty. In every state that I've worked in, and believe me, I've been in every meth capital you can imagine, there, as Representative Walls has stated, retailers are very willing to work with law enforcement to try and solve this problem. Nobody, and I mean nobody, wants to make a profit of the legitimate retailers off of the methamphetamine problem in the areas that I've been in. Practically every place I've been, there have been agreements, not ordinances, to try and work through this. The reason that large retailers have a problem with this is because of the highly sophisticated systems that they have in their stores. It's my understanding that having differing local ordinances can cause a severe glitch, so to speak, for the larger retailers. But that also may be possible for the smaller change. And I'm not as familiar with the Minnesota retail community as maybe some of the other people here at the table, but if you've got five stores in five different localities and you do training for all your clerks at one time, well, you get this training and you get this training and you get this training. State laws that cover this kind of issue, as Representative Fuller is trying to do here, I think this is a really good measure that would help the state. It is by no means our intent to try and tie the hands of cities. And in some of the other states that have looked at legislation like this, and I think we're more than willing to work on this issue, they have included language that states the city or state can enact similar or the same, but they just can't go any lower. And that, you know, that is something that the retailers and the law enforcement in those states have agreed to. I'd like to just turn it over to Ms. Parda for a moment, because I think she can really speak to how this would affect her members.
Hi. Once again, I'm Abby Parda with the Minnesota Grocers Association. And I think that the key here is that grocers, they don't want to be supplying meth users. No way, if there's a problem in their area. But the key is they would like to work voluntary with law enforcement on these issues and to end up with local ordinances all over the state that are different. It will be very problematic.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilty.
As part of Ms. Gupta, if there isn't any retailer that wants to be responsible for this, why is it happening? If every retailer is someone who clearly does not want to have anything to do with this, with the manufacture of methamphetamine, where are the cooks getting
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, there are many ways that meth cooks circumvent laws in every state. Of the seven states that have retail sales limits, and California has had there since 1999, the meth problem has not gone away. If I had the answers to how to solve this problem, I'd be on an island in Hawaii instead of traveling across the country to try and help the states with this. I can give you a number of ways that meth cooks go about this. I'm sure law enforcement here can do that too. But I think that Minnesota needs to start with something. Obviously, the methamphetamine problem here is growing. You've heard the numbers from law enforcement. And starting with retail sales limits, I think, is a really good way to go. And some of the states that have done this have seen a decrease, but they've also seen increased law enforcement. One of the most effective programs that I've seen, has been a program in Kansas. It's called the Kansas Meth Watch Program. I provided some of that information to Representative Fuller, and I know it's in another bill on the Senate side. That is a voluntary statewide program that retailers like the ones in Representative Walls' district joined together with law enforcement, with the Kansas Department of Health and Environment. They have stickers on their doors. They have shelf talkers. They tell people coming through the registers that we are watching you if you're buying these products. And there are photos of all the products used to manufacture methamphetamine. Kansas instituted that program about 2 years ago. They have no retail sales limits in the state, and yet they're one of the few states where their meth labs have gone down the first year by over 100, and again, the most recent data I've seen, again, by another 100, whereas a neighboring state like Missouri that has no comprehensive voluntary program but has retail sales limits, their meth labs have gone up. So one of the things that we certainly support is effective controls like this that keep the products available to legitimate consumers. And we have to remember there the majority of people in Minnesota using these products are legitimate consumers while still balancing that with the voluntary programs that are out there and available to retailers that I think that everybody sitting at this table will fully support. I know that the pharmacists have talked about going from school to school to school to talk to kids about methamphetamine. We think that's great, and we think that's certainly an effective way to try and fight the problem.
Any further questions that I've missed? All right, then we're on the Representative Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to give the city here.
Who do we have? Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Jennifer O'Rourke with the League of Minnesota Cities, and we appreciate the opportunity to come down and make some quick comments on the A6 amendment. For the record, I did visit with Representative Gunther early in session on this bill when he had introduced it last year, so that's who I approached on this because I knew it was a problem, especially down in the southern part of the state. I'm glad you're talking about the preemptive language. We would be opposed to this amendment, obviously, because it does preempt local control on this matter. Representative Waltz tells a really good story about what they're doing in Baxter that works, and we know that often these things work really well voluntarily between the retailers and the police or whatever group, and it doesn't always need to be done through ordinance, but we'd be concerned about any attempts that would preempt a city or a county from having a stronger ordinance on this really important matter. And I'll stand for questions.
Any further?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, neither the membership of AMC or MICA has addressed this specific amendment. However, like my colleague with the League of Cities, we would be opposed to this amendment because of its preemption of local control. We do commend the retailers in the Baxter area for their voluntary participation, and I know that that is an option for a number of retailers. If the need comes to have a local ordinance, I believe that the cities, as was stated, and the counties would prefer to have that ability to enforce that and take that on themselves.
Further questions? Representative Fuller.
Mr. Chair, if there are no more questions, I'd renew my motion that the A6 be passed, or A6-6.
Okay, hearing no further discussion on Fuller's motion to adopt the A6-6 amendment, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
Saves me one trip to local government committee, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chair, in interest of time, I'd like to move the A7 amendment and see if we can get finished up.
Okay, the motion is the amendment is before us. Tell us about it.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Laura LaCroix, and I'm here today representing the Association of Minnesota Counties. And in the A7 amendment, there are three issues. The first issue is on child protection. Currently in Section 7, Subdivision 6, the language would propose a separate child protection statute for methamphetamine drug-related crimes, and the author has agreed with us that that's probably not our intent, so we wanted to just cross-reference existing statute, and that's what we've been using thus far, and it's been working successfully. We did then add additionally information about health screening. That is a current requirement, but we wanted to make sure all communities were testing for meth-specific drugs and byproducts. So we referenced, again, existing statute, and we added some new language that would make it a requirement to offer health screening for methamphetamine drugs for kids who were known to be exposed to meth lab sites but were not necessarily taken into protective custody. And we referenced, again, the existing statute to allow counties to access private pay insurance or the individual's insurance first, which is what we normally would do in our process. The second part of this amendment has to do with the Vulnerable Adults Act. What we did is we wanted to tighten up the language. We were concerned it was a little too broad. An example would be if there was a lab being cooked in a facility that had, you know, 30 floor high rise, we would, the way it's written, have to take all of the citizens or all the families who are in that high rise into protective custody. And we didn't think that that was the most reasonable, that we would not need to. Not everybody would have been exposed to. So we tightened up the language so that people would be exposed. And then there was a minor technical change that would allow the social service agency to determine maltreatment and not a peace officer to make the determination of maltreatment. And then the final change was from our county recorder's office, tightening up the language using legal language on recording hazardous, when a property has been determined a hazardous waste site. We just tightened up the legal language there.
Any questions, Representative Ellison?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fuller, isn't it true that under existing law, if a county attorney or a child protection worker believes that a child is in need of protection and services because they live in a home where there's drugs being sold, that a CHIPS case can be started? I mean, doesn't that exist under existing law?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ellison, yes, it does.
Could you share with me then why this provision is necessary, given that we can already do it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ellison, from what I have heard, and the reason the issue was brought before to me is because when my officers are going out and they're taking down one of these meth labs, it's not because a child protective services worker has come across because they're, you know, watching this family or whatnot. What they're coming into these homes and busting these meth labs up, there's children there. The officers are looking for language to know what are we supposed to do with these children. How do we get them in to the system? My understanding, this gives them that direction that they need for where they go with the children.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ellison.
Is this a problem that is more of a problem in Bemidji than in the cities? Because in Minneapolis, if the police kick down a door of a home where there's crime being conducted and there are children there, there are set procedures for what to do. Is there a void perhaps in your area on this issue? Or
Mr. Chair and Representative Ellison, our understanding is that it really comes down to a training issue in some areas of the state, and we wanted to assure that we used existing statute and that we informed our peace officers of what the existing statute was. So if children are there, they would be taken into protective custody in most cases. However, we wanted to give them permission to access family members when appropriate because that clarification was not previously allowable.
Last question. And now, my last question is, you know, different parts of the state are fighting the scourge of different kind of drugs. Unfortunately, in North Minneapolis, you know, crack cocaine is a serious problem. It's not as much meth, quite honestly. And, I mean, certainly health screening would be good for those kids. Why is this a meth? Why is it only exclusive? Why is this amendment only for meth?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ellison, because what is happening is in these homes, these people are making the drug. They're cooking it up.
They cook crack.
The chemicals, you know, and everything with the byproducts of this drug, you know, if the same need is there for crack, let's work on that. But right now, this is current law in the A7 amendment being now referenced into this statute, so when the officers are going through it, they read it, it's now there for them.
Anything further? All right, we're on the A7 amendment, I believe, Representative Fuller, is that correct?
That's correct, Mr.
If there's no further discussion, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion prevails. That amendment is adopted. Representative Fuller moves the A8 amendment. That's before us.
I do, Mr. Chair. We'll be very brief. And
Mr. Chairman and members.
Excuse me, before you start,
yes.
Members and Representative Ellison, I don't think this amendment is timely. Is there any objection to this committee hearing it? If not.
For the record, I do not object.
Thank you, sir.
Given the last ruling.
Right. Ma'am, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Janice Smith-Watkins. I'm the Midwest Regional Director of State Affairs for the American Chemistry Council, and I'm here speaking on behalf of the American Chemistry Council's GBL BDO panel. This particular amendment, A8, would provide an industrial use exemption for gamma butylactone and 1,4-butadiol, which are currently on the Controlled Substances Schedule 1 list. In August of 2002, the Minnesota Board of Pharmacy added GBL to the controlled substances list, but failed to recognize that there are industrial uses for this, and we just want to ensure that our members are still able to manufacture these particular drugs for the products that are used for that.
Any questions, Representative Murphy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What are the industrial uses?
Industrial uses are applications including circuit board cleaning in electronics and high technology industries, production of herbicides and the processing aid in the production of vitamins and pharmaceuticals. BDO is also used as an intermediate ingredient and common in industrial commercial products such as spandex, engineering plastics, polyurethane systems such as golf balls, skateboard wheels, and car bumpers.
Quite a range there, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions or discussion on the amendment?
if
not, Representative Murphy.
I'm sorry. Those items that were mentioned are used by the people that we don't want to have access to them.
Mm-hmm.
So are we sure that those people aren't going to have access there?
This particular amendment only provides for industrial use of these drugs. Any other type of use, whether it's misuse, would be still controlled under the Schedule 1.
Further discussion? On the A8 amendment.
I'll renew my motion, Mr. Chair.
Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
As opposed, say no. That motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We now have, if there are no more amendments.
Mr. Chair, if I could just wrap up.
Go ahead. House File 1989, as amended, is before us. Representative Fuller renews his motion. Be recommended to pass and be re-referred to Civil Law Committee. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much, committee members. There was a number of amendments, and I appreciate your indulgence. This bill is going to go before a number of other committees in the House, but this committee is going to be its last stop before it would move on to the floor, be included in an omnibus bill. There may be some other changes to it on the way. So for now, if you could support moving this on to the next committee, and then at that point we could have a larger discussion and description of the bill in its form before it would be laid on the table for inclusion in an omnibus bill, Mr. Chairman.
Any discussion, Representative Whitman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Fuller, I'm going to support your motion. I like a lot of the things that are in your bill, although I do have one comment that I'd urge you to consider as this makes stops along the way. If methamphetamine were to be placed on a time continuum, you certainly deal with pre-manufacture with regards to additional education for retailers and tighter regulation and restriction of precursors. with regards to manufacturer later in time, tougher penalties on manufacturer and a wider range of types of penalties for manufacturer, and then later the after effects, not only aftercare, special arrangements made for children that are in meth homes or in proximity to meth labs, and also redemption of property through the Public Facilities Authority loans and all of that. So at many stages along the way, you have quite a comprehensive approach, save one piece, which is treatment for the person who has a meth problem. That seems like a gaping absence in what otherwise is a very comprehensive approach. What, in your vision, is the role that this committee and the legislature should take as far as meth treatment so that we don't have a recurrence of these types of problems, in addition to the otherwise comprehensive approach that you've taken?
I'll have an answer for you when we get back, Representative, if that'll work.
Tamar.
Representative Fuller, I am concerned about, in reading the fiscal note, it talks about that no other drug offenses have mandatory minimums for a first offense. And I wonder if you could speak to that, whether you really believe that having a mandatory minimum would actually provide a deterrent from, I'm not talking about a young person starting to get involved with manufacturing small amounts of meth for their own habit.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar, absolutely. I know what you're saying, and that is why when this bill comes back to deal with the fiscal note side of this, there are many other issues that this committee is going to have to look very closely upon, and you just brought up one of them. I don't know that I'm ready to have the mandatory minimums, at least at the level they are. I think there was 5 or 10 years in here. That creates a whole other issue. But what I am trying to say is we need to start dealing with these people. Like Representative Lippman just brought up, the trick to this is just with our DWI offenders is they need to quit using meth when, you know, they have a drug problem. On the other side with the DWIs, they have an alcohol problem. We need to deal with that side of it as well, and I look forward to that discussion.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Paymar,
you and I were sitting on a committee yesterday where a young woman was talking about, I think you were there at the time, that trouble that she had gotten into, other members were there, and she talked about her experiences with methamphetamines and turned her life around. Now, let's just, I don't know if she was actually manufacturing, but she could have been involved with friends of hers, since it seems like it's easy to do. Let's assume hypothetically that she was manufacturing a small amount for personal use. Now, this young woman turned her life around. Under your bill, she would, under mandatory minimum, she would be required to spend 2 years in prison. Does that seem like justice to you?
Representative Fuller.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Paymar, I don't know her individual, you know, situation and what other history she had. But if you are manufacturing methamphetamines at a level for distribution is different and should be than maybe, you know, small amounts, depending on the level. But if you are manufacturing and selling methamphetamine, if the question is, do I think 2 years is a long time for that crime, I do not.
Mr. Chair, that's not what your bill says. I mean, the mandatory minimum does not talk about selling, if I'm reading this correctly. If you violate subdivision 2A, does not talk about selling. And it talks about, and it doesn't talk about the quantity of what you're selling, manufacturing. It's any amount.
Right.
I mean, I think we need to be clear about this. You know, we're trying to get after the people that are manufacturing significant amounts of this stuff, and, you know, and selling it. And Mr. Chair, is an oral amendment in order?
It is. Also, I was thinking about your quest, or not your quest, your
it's
comment.
A quest.
No.
It's a quest for some sanity.
Well, Representative Pimer, you do have a legitimate point. I think, in my own personal opinion, from what little I know of methamphetamine and what little I've heard in the last 6 months, I don't know that you're correct. I think we could take, not now, not this moment, we could hear more from law enforcement. We could hear more from the sheriffs that I've heard that have had users under arrest requesting incarceration as the only way to get them off the drug. I don't know that we've had adequate testimony relative to treatment, and if the standard approaches to treatment that we currently have are going to be able to do it. This is an insidious drug. We've had testimony earlier. This is nobody's business but mine. I got here like everyone else yesterday after close to noon, and I got a call. Fortunately, nothing was serious, but I got a call from my school, my son's school. He's 15. He had lacerated his chin. He'd fallen during a physical activity, and I didn't show up for session. I canceled out my meetings to go home. Fortunately, I'm only 32 miles away. Did what any parent at this table would do and go look after their children. Got back here, took him to urgent care, and got back here. That aside, we heard testimony briefly this morning from, I think, Ms. Kino, talking about a place where there were three children, sewage backed up in the bathtub. We heard about the children having puncture marks on their feet, on their legs, and on their hands. Now, I have to think that those parents, without using meth, love their children as much as we all do, and wouldn't be engaging in that kind of horrible activity. Meth is an insidious evil that we got to do something about. And maybe we should have more testimony, and we will see this bill again. Now, I will entertain your oral motion, and I apologize for doing this, but we do need to take time for your motion and for the rest of this testimony, perhaps not today, but we have 500 South reserved for after session. And frankly, I hate to do that, but I'm going to recess this committee and let us come back after session. Take up your amendment and the rest of this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we recess and as we take this back up, also if you could provide some information or some discussion. I believe from what I've heard that people who are cooking methamphetamines aren't necessarily doing it for sale. It's more for family members. It's kind of a group or a clan. And so as we're looking at this amendment, we want to make sure that we address that issue as well. So if you could provide testimony about that.
We'll take your bill up immediately after session. This meeting is recessed. Call the Judiciary Policy Finance Committee reconvene back into order. I think we'll first take number one, we'll try to repeat this. Our meeting tomorrow is scheduled for 9 o'clock, not 10 o'clock, if anyone is under that misconception. 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Secondly, let's go to the minutes. They're in your packet. They're for the March 2, 2004 hearing. Representative Waltz, you've paid particular attention in today's morning sessions, so Representative Waltz moves approval of the minutes. Any questions? And if not, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion is approved. Minutes are adopted. Did you have any more amendments, Representative Fuller?
Mr. Chair, no. We have no more amendments at this time.
Are there any other amendments? Representative Hamar.
I have the amendments drafted, or I can do them orally. Whichever you would.
Let's try it orally, see if we can handle it that way.
Okay. I would move then to on page 3 on line 21, delete everything after D. And then lines 22 and 24, line 25, and on line 30, delete F, and insert E on line 32, delete the or and E, and on page 4, line 4, delete G and insert F, and on page 4, line 5, delete the or and E. Is that correct? Do that right? That works? So basically, Mr. Chair, members, what I'm trying to do here, I have another amendment that addresses treatment issues, but this one basically deletes the mandatory minimum for the first offense, and I guess I expressed my concerns about the about this at committee this morning. That basically subdivision 2A talks about the manufacturing of any amount, which raises concerns. I've for a long time had concerns about mandatory minimums on drug offenses as it is, but I think in this case, the example that I raised about this young woman yesterday that was at the legislature testifying, I just don't think that we want to mix all offenders together, especially when we have language in there that any amount of methamphetamines is manufactured. But I also want to say that I have an amendment here that that requires judges to that would require judges to have the offender participate in long-term drug treatment both during the person's term of imprisonment and while on supervised release. And I think that that gets at the issue. The other point I wanted to make is that by taking this this language out, it does not preclude the judge from ordering prison. It just eliminates the mandatory minimum. So you could still, the judge, if they found that the first offense for manufacturing methamphetamines was egregious enough, they could sentence the offender to the full 10 years. So I would appreciate your support.
Representative Fuller, your response.
Mr. Chair and Representative Paymar, first of all, thanks for offering the amendment. I guess at this point in the process, I guess I would ask that you withdraw the amendment for today and the other one dealing with the treatment and that. Over at session this afternoon, I spent a few minutes with Representative Ellison talking about mandatory minimums and the like, and also that has a big impact on the fiscal note and a whole bunch of issues. And for Representative Lipman's comments from this morning, also dealing with treatment, I do think that we need to have a piece in this bill dealing with treatment. Where are we going? What are we doing with these offenders? And I would like to spend more time on that with the committee on that issue and come up with some kind of a comprehensive, you know, plan that we can work with dealing with the fiscal note and treatment and what do we do with these people between now and when this bill comes back before the committee, so we have more time, maybe even hear from some people involved in the treatment of people addicted to methamphetamine and use more of a comprehensive approach rather than just trying to amend the mandatory minimums out and put something in. I'd like to be involved with you and whoever else wants to be on the committee, including Representative Ellison, Representative Soderstrom, in trying to come up with a plan for when this bill comes back before this committee, which it will have to do before being included in an omnibus bill of any kind, to try and take the next week, 2 weeks, to try and come up with some kind of a larger comprehensive plan. And I would commit to working with you on that rather than trying to do it today.
Representative Paymar? Sure, I don't know what I mean, my position on the mandatory minimum certainly wouldn't change between now and whenever, but I'd certainly be willing to work with you on the the treatment aspects. But I don't see why we need to delay removing the mandatory minimums from the bill.
Mr. Chair, if I could just follow up, and you're not incorrect there, Representative Paymar, but also the opportunity is going to be there again when this bill comes back before the committee to offer the same amendment then to whatever we were able to come up with dealing with the treatment and whatever. If there's a mandatory minimum, maybe there's not. Maybe there'll be a delete all. I don't know at this point, but for today, I guess I'd ask your indulgence to let us move forward with what's in the bill and come up with a plan when it comes back. And then at that point, if it's still not your liking, offer your amendment. You're certainly welcome to offer it then. I'll be voting no just because I want to move forward with the way it is and come up with a better plan in the end.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to move the amendment. You can always do that too, Representative Fuller, when we come back and try to amend it, the language back in if you feel like it's appropriate. But I would hope that the committee would add a little common sense to this, looking at the fiscal note, looking at the possibility that some first-time offenders could potentially end up in prison. I don't think that's what we want to do, and we want to get at those folks that law enforcement testified about that are doing the most egregious manufacturing of this horrible drug. That's what we're trying to get after, and I'm just worried that some people that shouldn't be getting caught up in the mix are going to get caught up in it, and I think we should deal with it now.
Representative Eastland, question.
I just have a comment more than anything. I guess I appreciate Representative Fuller's willingness to go ahead and try and find a solution, and I guess I'm certainly willing to support that. But I do support what Representative Paymar is getting at here, and I guess I wouldn't support your amendment today, but I mean, if it doesn't get fixed and it comes back, I would support your amendment. So.
Representative Ellison.
Mr. Chair, I did take a moment to talk with Representative Fuller during the time interim period between this committee meeting and the one earlier this morning. I'm confident that you're willing to discuss this issue with us on treatment and mandatory minimums. I'm a little reluctant to try to force a vote when there's a possibility that you might take the mandatory minimum stuff out. And after talking with you, I hope you don't feel that I'm betraying anything by letting folks know that you're not, you know, solid granted on the mandatory minimum aspects of this thing either, and that, you know, there are other parts of this bill that you feel far more strongly about. Is that a fair statement?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ellison, that's absolutely fair.
And so, given that there's a possibility only, you haven't made any promises, that we could put treatment in this bill and maybe the mandatory minimums won't make it in anyway, I'd be happy to deal with this thing when it comes back. And I also might add that there might be some members who haven't really looked at some of the learning we have acquired on mandatory minimums. You know, but we've had at least 20 years of drug policy with crack cocaine where we really have learned something about what mandatory minimums add up to. And I wouldn't want a member to not get a chance to get all the education that they need to really understand this issue of how these mandatory minimums work. So I'm okay with dealing with on the next round. Representative Paymar moves the amendment, I will be voting in favor of your amendment. But I don't think that we lose anything, especially if we can have this bill in better shape when it comes back. I have a question, Mr. Chair.
Representative, you've got the floor.
Go of on. Yourself. Sure. Would a person be ruled out of order if they dealt with a policy issue on the bill when it comes back on the finance aspects of the bill? I guess that's a procedural question I'd like answered. Because when it comes back, I'm assuming we're dealing with the finance part of the bill.
Well, it strikes me that's a reasonable question, and it's within the context of the current motion which the author of the bill has asked that the motion be withdrawn because he wants to work on it. It sounds quite sincere, Representative Fuller. the bill will come back, and it would be nice to deal with policy and then get it back after other policy committees have looked at it or other committees and then just deal with the dollars. However, the authors asked for time to come back, Representative Paymar and Representative Ellison, and deal with policy. I frankly would not like to see the amendment passed tonight since the author has asked for additional time. We will deal with policy at the next hearing when it comes back. So I think it would do unreasonable harm at this time to do that, in as much as we're essentially going to have an extended policy discussion at the next hearing. So the answer is no, you would not be ruled out of order for that particular action on your part.
I'll try on some other aspects.
I got some more stuff I can try.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Paymar.
I'd like to ask Representative Fuller, are you amenable to taking out the mandatory minimums after we have discussion between now and the time it comes back to this committee?
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar, I would tell you the answer is yes, but as Representative Ellison has said, I'm not making any promises at this point because I want to see what any combination of treatment, sentencing that we come up with. So, I am not sold on the fact that we need to have a 2 to 10 year sentence for any first-time offender. I am not sold on that.
And so we have one other questioner, but just to amend my previous answer, Representative Ellison, while I would prefer not to have to call a vote on this motion, and I am prepared to vote no on it and to proceed with the vote if the author of the amendment wants to pursue it. We have a questioner, Representative Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd just like to say that I find myself in sympathy with Representative Paymar's amendment here. It seems to me that we'd be coming back with a bill that could be where this language could be re-added if the discussions didn't go well. It came back in a way that we weren't satisfied with. I also think that we'd get a better fiscal note in front of us than we have right now, and I would like to support the amendment. I heard Representative Fuller just say that he's not tied to this, and he is willing to perhaps negotiate a better result. And if we vote, however, this afternoon, I'm going to vote for the amendment.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to speak also in favor of the Paymar Amendment. You know, given how filled our jails are, I think we really have to stop and consider that, in addition to the treatment end, obviously, but we need to take a serious look at the issue of the 2 to 10. And I think the Paymar's heading in the right direction here, so FYI.
All right, on the amendment, any further discussion? Representative Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Fuller, this is a big part of the minimum sentences are a big policy issue. What policies are going to be discussed, do you figure, will be discussed in those other committees that this bill is going to? Like it's going to here to civil law, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, that's an excellent question. There are several issues. I'll try and get them all off the top of my head or some of them to give you an idea. There is an issue that is going to have to be dealt with in Commerce Committee, dealing with real property, real estate, also vehicles, how we deal with properties and vehicles that have had methamphetamine labs in them, how we let future owners of those pieces of property, how we make them aware. There's cleanup issues. Civil law, I'm assuming, is going to deal with several different issues in that regard of, you know, who's responsible for what. So there's also the issue of cleanup for counties, trying to encourage, or how do we deal with counties, potentially in local the local government committee, dealing with local ordinances on who's actually responsible for paying to clean up. these properties, whether it's the county then going back after landowners, or if it's the landowners with, you know, somehow in conjunction. So there's a long road to hoe for this bill, and it's not a one committee stop, and we're going to have it back. So there is going to be some time to work on the issue of treatment and the sentences for these offenders. And I guess my preference is, even knowing, you know, if we take the two-year minimum sentences out, what that would have on the fiscal note, as Representative Powell brought up, would be nice to have that updated fiscal note. I think we can get that without changing it. But I think there's a larger emphasis put on us to come up with a fix if that's still in there. And getting Representative Paymar and Ellison, myself, and anybody who wants to be involved in that discussion together, because we'll need to talk about that. That's a large percentage of the fiscal note. And I think the more we can do to come up with a comprehensive plan, the better chances we have of passing a good methamphetamine bill this year.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
I think it's such a big issue that the committee should be discussing it. It should be discussed in committee because it has such financial impacts as well as policy impacts. I understand what you're saying about that you will vote no and that we can talk about it again. Is it your feeling, what is your feeling on amendments that have, the subject has been talked about before and been defeated and then coming up again at the, when we're here to evaluate the fiscal part of it?
I want to give you, Representative Murphy, I want to give you a sincere answer and not try to sound too flippant, but it would seem that my policy is somewhat liberal in as much as we're hearing an oral amendment that's somewhat substantive. I think, you know, bottom line is, I am going to vote no on this amendment, but I'm also probably going to get at least an informal fiscal note to find out what it would mean if it passes or doesn't pass. So we are going to have a full discussion, policy and fiscally, at our next hearing, which it would be the last stop before the floor, before Ways and Means. Just a minute. I can't answer a hypothetical without knowing what the hypothetical is.
Mr. Chair, but
I've never been known to stifle debate in the past on any issue, so I don't intend to start now either.
I'm very sympathetic to Representative Paymar, and I also know that Representative Fuller is a person of his word also, and so I'm kind of caught in a bind, but I don't think we should, if the judge can sentence someone to 10 years, if they want to, if he or she wants to, it seems to me we don't need it, and that it would be much a friendlier bill if we didn't have it in. But then I also understand that what you might be saying, and you didn't say it, but we want to appear that we are uncompromising and relentless in our intent to close down these meth labs.
Mr. Chair, if I might, and Representative Murphy, I do feel very strongly that we want to send that message. I don't know that the two-year mandatory minimum sentence is the answer either for those first-time offenders. What I can tell you in my brief discussions with Representative Ellison was we talked about, you know, bringing in somebody before this committee for the full committee to hear and learn about, talking about mandatory minimum sentences and those people that treat methamphetamine users. I've heard the number that 6% of those addicted to methamphetamine fail in treatment. We need, I think, as this committee, to hear and understand that better. And my thoughts are that in the next couple of weeks, whatever time we have before this comes back, that whoever wants to work on this issue with us, you know, to come forward, including those sitting behind me, to come up with somewhat of a plan or a potential amendment that we would bring forward with the idea that this committee would hear discussion from those dealing with those people that are addicted to methamphetamine to somehow try and come up with a comprehensive plan if we can. leading to the amendment currently before us, my thought is whether it goes on or off or is not offered today, I don't think, I don't want to interfere with that discussion coming later before this committee, because I think those, that very issue of the mandatory minimum sentences would be part of that as needed or not, and this committee will eventually be making that decision. And I think we just move forward today and deal with Representative Paymar to be involved in that discussion and offer the amendment then if it's still in the bill, which I don't know if it would or wouldn't be.
Well, Representative Fuller, you've asked a question that's been answered. You've asked that the motion be withdrawn. It hasn't been. So we're going to get through whatever debate we're going to quickly, and we're going to get to voting on this motion within a couple of minutes. So if there's anyone else that wants to comment, let's do it and do it quickly. Do we have Representative Lippman next?
Oh, well, no, I was just, I wasn't aware, Mr. Chairman, members, that Representative Paymar had been asked to withdraw the amendment or release the discussion. I was going to offer, or first ask if tabling it would be proper, and so that all of us, before it comes back to us again, could do more of this reading. I'd like to have the benefit of going through all of this before casting that vote. But if you wanted to try and you know, proceed today, we could certainly do that. I think it might be more useful if we could all get educated and maybe hear some more testimony, talk with folks a little bit. I'm not sure that this committee needs to decide this today, because we're going to see it again in another week's time. So I guess I would just offer that as perhaps a suggestion, which is we could table it. It would be still in active consideration. It wouldn't be withdrawn. That might be a little bit better, and we could read up.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question about the fiscal note that would come forward. I want to make sure that whatever fiscal note we get would reflect the potentials of treatment and mandatory minimums, be it 1 year, 2 year, or whatever it is that it ends up as. And so the question would be, in the event that it was removed, mandatory minimums were removed, what impact would that really have then on getting the big picture about the final cost? Because the last thing that I want to see happen is for us then to put them back in and then have a bill that's underfunded or something that is not workable due to financial circumstances. Anybody has an answer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilfer, I guess I would ask Mr. Matzik to forward on that question to Mr. Nirenberg and see if they could request that from the Department of Corrections or whoever, and see if we could get kind of an amendment to the fiscal note. Or Mr. Carter.
Representative Hillstrom, if the question is, restate the question a little shorter term, efforted.
Sure.
Restate your question.
Okay, Mr. Chair, the question is, in the event that we remove the mandatory minimums today, and then we add in treatment, and then it's put back in, we will not get an accurate picture of the fiscal note. Is that correct?
Well, let me answer it this way and see if it answers your question. We'll be following this bill when it leaves here. Certainly, we'll see what it looks like when it leaves here. As the chair, I'm the only one that can ask for a fiscal note that is of a nature that can be submitted to this committee. And we'll do that on the basis of what it looks like when it leaves here. We'll be tracking it and see what it looks like when it's headed back. Probably we'll ask for an amended one if we need to. So I think that's my answer. All right, we're on the motion. No motion. Any further discussion? Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
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 The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. All right, do we have any further amendments? If not, then we're on the bill as amended. Any discussion, further discussion on the bill as amended? motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to renew my motion that House File 1989 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law.
Final call for discussion. Seeing none, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no.
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed and referred to the Committee on Civil Law.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No other business for this evening. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.